This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Astrology University podcast. We're kind of taking a little sidetrack today, and we're going to veer into somewhat non-astrological territory as we talk about dreams with Stephanie Gehling, who is a wellness astrologer. And I'm so happy to have you join us, Stephanie, and also a dear friend. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
So what I'm most excited about is because I've, of course, known that you've been working on this book for a long time, but you recently released your newest book, The Complete Book of Dreams, back in the fall. And as soon as you released it, we got you on the calendar to talk about it. The first thing I want to say is, oh my goodness, this book is so gorgeous. I don't know if for those of you seeing the video, you can see the pages are just beautifully laid out, and there's a lot of artistry and color, totally appropriate to the topic, and lots of beautiful illustrations. So well done on your book collaboration there. And the book is called The Complete Book of Dreams, A Guide to Unlocking the Meaning and Healing Power of Your Dreams. So definitely check it out on Amazon, worthy purchase. So Stephanie, I thought we could just start by having you tell us a bit about the inspiration you had for the book. So what inspired you to write the book? I know you've been interested in dreams for a long time.
I've been interested in dreams for a really long time. I mean, ever since I was young, I was captivated and fascinated by my dreams. And as someone with a lot of Pisces in their chart and a strong Neptunian influence, you know, the dream world and the world of poetry and symbolism and myth has always captivated me. And my work for, you know this, and maybe some who are listening know this, my work has always been reflected a marriage of different principles and practices. So I weave together astrology and wellness practices. But it wasn't until 2011 when I felt very called to go to a workshop here in Seattle at the Young Society given by a Lawrence Hillman. And I say a Lawrence Hillman because I didn't know Lawrence at that time. And it was on astrology and dreams. And at that moment, when I even just saw the title, I thought, of course these two connect together. So I went to the workshop and I just realized this was such a natural marriage and a natural marriage and field for me to study, because just to see the synergy between them. So I studied with Lawrence and became really inspired by Lawrence and our friendship and began pursuing that field of study. And then that field just opened up into my whole being really captivated by the dreams themselves, the healing power of dreams, and of course, helping people to inspire their sleep, because sleep is at the foundation of well-being, let alone because to sleep, you then can dream.
So beautiful. Awesome. Yeah. And you gave a workshop for us a couple of years back on astrology and dreams. And as I'm looking through your table of contents in the book, I can see how some of the material you presented for us made its way into the book as well and got, I'm sure, elaborated on in great detail. But you kind of start out in that first section talking about sleep. So can you tell folks a little bit about the things you cover in there? I see that there's a section on remedies and tips, and there are some tips for better sleep, I'm sure.
Yeah. And so first, right, just to know that sleep is at the fundamentals of good health, right? It's been shown that people who don't sleep enough and don't sleep well, have an array of different conditions, whether it be health conditions like heart disease or depression, anxiety, worse relationships. So it's really important. And I really believe the importance of revering your sleep. So how do you do that, right? Some of the things that you can do are like at the center of sleep hygiene principles. Revere your sleep. Consider that your bed is just for those three important things: sleeping, dreaming, and lovemaking. You know, have a routine schedule when you go to sleep and when you awaken. I also think what's really beautiful and I found to be very important for people that I've worked with is to treat your bedroom like a dream and sleep sanctuary. You know, have it be cozy, have it be beautiful, have it be in order, right? A cluttered space is a cluttered mind. So that this way, you know, you look forward to going into bed, into your bedroom. In the book too, I talk about a lot of feng shui principles and other design principles to make your bedroom a dream sanctuary, a sleep sanctuary. And of course, there's a host of different natural remedies, flower essences that I talk about, essential oils, herbs, you know, meditation practices, breathing practices, all those things too, to help you to relax so that you can sweetly usher in sleep.
Beautiful. A lot of practical and useful stuff there, but I just love that vibe you bring in about reverence for sleep and creating a dream and sleep sanctuary. That was really profound for me to think about personally, because I've read some of the tips for sleeping before, but when you bring in those qualities, it takes it to another level of experience and beautiful level of experience. And also it's really honoring what you're setting us up for is a deep, healthy sleep so that we can dream well, ultimately, right? And it's also having reverence for the dreams themselves, right?
And at the root of this, I mean, my sort of twofold inspiration for my work and for the book was one, as I shared, about understanding the marriage between astrology and dreams, but also was the discovery of the ancient dream temples, the ancient Greek dream temples, the Asclepia. Right. You know, in the ancient Greco-Roman times, they built these magnificent temples, like our sort of modern healing spa, if you will. And I think there's like still ruins of about 300 of them scattered around the Mediterranean basin. And people would travel far and wide when they were infirmed to go to these temples. And at the root of these temple sanctuaries was the belief that healing can come through the dream. So they had all of these different ritual practices you would go in to prepare yourself for sleep and dreams, and the space that was created as such, right? So that you could have this healing dream, ideally like connecting to Asclepius, the god of dreams and the father of medicine. And then after that, you would have the interpretations by the priest physicians who would help you interpret and understand the healing power of your dream. And there are records of people coming in infirmed and leaving full of bountiful health. And so that was so captivating for me, the fact that at the core of a culture and a medical system of a culture was the nexus of that was the dream and its healing potential. So then thinking about from that perspective, the sanctuary perspective, I felt really passionate to think like, how can I bring that idea to life in terms of a modern day approach to like, that, you know, our bedrooms are these sanctuaries for sleep and invariably for dreams.
Beautiful. That's just amazing, amazing image to lead us all into, but also to, like you said, to try to kind of recreate that experience practically, because we're probably, and my guess is our culture is not going to build a dream temple anytime soon. So build it in your bedroom. Right? Exactly. So speaking of dreams, and that takes us into the next section of the book, and you talk about what dreams are. But there are a couple of sections in there that piqued my curiosity that I thought you could maybe tell folks more about on the podcast. And the first one is lucid dreams. So I know some of you, our listeners, have maybe heard of lucid dreams before, but can you tell folks a little bit about what you're sharing in the book about lucid dreams?
Absolutely. And lucid dreams, you know, when people think about dreams, they think about an experience where they're not conscious. Like you have a dream, you don't know that you're dreaming. But lucid dreams, you're knowing you're dreaming while you're having a dream, right? So it can range from anything, just that awareness of, wait, I'm dreaming, like that recognition, to people actually being able to be active participants and guiding their dreams. And whether that's through there's a lot of psychotherapists that work with lucid dreams for reduction of PTSD and for trauma, because you can come, say, into a nightmare, and instead of that bear coming after you or you running away, you transfigure the dream, right? So that you're then sort of transfiguring your fear. So lucid dreams like run the gamut. And there's, you know, again, been found to like, some people just like that because they think that it's like interesting and cool. Like, look, I can fly, or look, I can do this, or I can do that, to actually their therapeutic usage, as well as, you know, lucid dreams are conscious dreams. And there's also this whole tradition of, you know, spiritual practices where you can connect to that higher level of consciousness through your dreams. So in the book, I talk about it. I talk about the history of it, and I give a host of different tips and tools on practices and how you can start to incorporate this into your life if you're interested.
So cool. So is this kind of what's happening when something that happens to me often when I'm either having a stress dream, or this happens more commonly with nightmares, where the nightmare will end in some very negative way. And then I keep redreaming it, but I'm kind of in this, the nightmare has been so strong that it's woken me up. And it feels like that next period of sleep, while I keep redreaming the nightmare to find a new solution, I feel a lot more conscious of what I'm doing. Like, I know, I remember the previous dream and I remember how it turned out, and I'm trying to find a new solution, but then I find myself back in the dream, kind of replaying it and then trying to create a new ending, basically. Is that kind of like lucid dreaming, or is that a little bit different?
Well, it sounds, I mean, do you feel, if I'm hearing you correctly, you sound like you have more consciousness that you're in a dream?
Yeah.
Like there's a different sense of sort of agency and awareness while you're in the dream. So then that is, you know, the realm of lucid dreaming.
Right. Okay. Interesting stuff. Yeah. And then you have, in the next section, you have one called somatic dreams. I love that word, somatic. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about what's in that section.
Yeah, I love that. And that's one of my favorite chapters, actually. So in that chapter, it's talking about, you know, right now, right? And what is it, probably in the last 10 years, where doctors would, you know, do ask people about their sleep, right? But they'd never ask them about their dreams, unless there are different healing traditions where dreams are taken as something that is an important reflection of your well-being on all levels. So I talk about Ayurveda and homeopathy and Maasai medicine and a variety of different healing traditions where the dreams are considered, even from that medical perspective or well-being perspective, as something to consider and look to. That's one piece of it. The other piece of it is how many people have found, right? And this is another good reason to tune into your dreams, that people have been able to find like cures in their dreams. Or in, you know, strong insights that come that help to guide them in terms of steps to take for their well-being. There's, you know, anecdotal, there's accounts of people like having very strong dreams about a symptom that they have, only to go to their doctor who says, no, this is nothing. And they press them. They said, this keeps on coming up for me, only to find that they have, you know, early stage tumor or cancer or what have you, right? So it's about, you know, looking at the dream from a potential for curative or diagnostic perspective, which makes sense because when you are in a dream, right, you are so tapped into that deep space of knowingness where the conscious mind sort of babble, right, is like filtered away. And so we can really get into that pool of our understanding and our knowingness. I actually had I've had several somatic dreams, but one of the most strongest one for me is I had this dream, and it goes back, oh my God, now 20 years ago, where I had this very strong dream that I walked into my naturopath's office. This is when I smoked. I was a light smoker, but I smoked nonetheless. I walked into her office and I sat down and I said, I need to quit smoking and I want to go to a hypnotherapist. And I tried to quit before and I never thought of hypnotherapy, and it only came through my dream. Lo and behold, I was actually going to my naturopath the next day. And I walked in, I said, I had this dream. I have to recount this dream to you. This is what happened. She gave me the name of a hypnotherapist. I went a couple of weeks later, stopped smoking.
Wow. Wow.
So tune to your dream also for yet. And I mean, we think about dreams from health, emotional health. Absolutely. Right. What we can understand in our dreams can really help our emotional well-being, but also to consider how it may add to our physical well-being as well, the insights that we get.
Yeah, it's like a doorway to speaking with the part of your psyche that might actually know the remedy as well as the ailment.
And it goes back, right? It has those roots in the healing temples, right? Mm-hmm. Where people would go in, you know, with, you know, not just psychological maladies. At that point, it was more about physical maladies, and they found cures or were cured.
So cool. Well, your next section is called Dreamwork Practices. And the next thing that caught my curiosity was a section called Dream Incubation. Can you tell us what that's about?
Okay. So dream incubation means two things. One, the big definition of it is the sacred practice of dreaming, like dreaming in the temples, having intention that I will have a healing dream. But I'm using it too in the other definition, which is the intentional practice of asking your dream for an insight that you would like it to reveal. Now, this might sound a little bit woo, but there's actually a good amount of research in peer-reviewed journals. Some of it is spearheaded by Deidre Barrett of Harvard, where they had people ask themselves for solutions before they went to bed. It guides the dream. The dream then reveals those solutions. So it's great for like creative problem solving, or, you know, you can't figure out, you're having problems in a relationship. You've tried it this way, that way, the other way to try to find a solution. So something you work on before you go to bed, you sit with your intention, you find a very clear, concise question about the answer that you're seeking. You roll it over again and again in your mind, you know, use it sort of as that lullaby, if you will, to like lull you to sleep. So you're sort of intentionally targeting that query of your dream. And in the morning, when you wake up, you don't first think, what was my question? And let me find the answer. You just write down what you remember for your dream. And then you look at it with that lens. Can you tell my Gemini rising? I use my hand so much. Sorry. Sorry to be distracting. You use that as a lens to see how the dream then answered the question. And it is remarkable. And I work with that with clients in any different situations, as well as when we come to talk about astro dream work. Dream incubation and astro dream work work beautifully together.
Yeah, I imagine it's helpful to have a guide sometimes in those moments, because you're looking at the dream thinking, you know, this doesn't seem to answer my question. But when you look at it, I imagine you probably are like, wow, the answer is right there, right? So you can help people see in a bit more clearly. Well, that takes us up to the next thing I want to talk about, which is, it's the thing that most dream books are full of, which is about interpretation. But I love that your book is so more well-rounded, right? It's not just a book of dream interpretation where you can kind of look up, what does a snake mean? but you do have a section on interpretation. So what is your general approach to dream interpretation?
I mean, and this is why I don't have in like, this means that, because I don't believe that to be true, if you will. I do think that there is verity and that like dream dictionaries or symbol dream books are important places to start. But the dreamer, I always believe that the dreamer knows what their dreams mean. Like even a psychologist, a dream worker like myself, I will never say, this is what your dream meant, right? It's the to be able to like see what arises in me, to give that reflection and to help guide somebody to find the answer within themselves as to where that that resonance is and what that dream meant. So in the book, I do sort of talk about some techniques for getting there, if you will, you know, talking about, you know, dream dictionaries and things like that, talking about Jung's practice of active imagination, talking about some sort of some divinatory practices like using the tarot to help understand your dreams, the I Ching, pendulums, and then talking about two other practices. One is working with a dream share partner, right? Like finding a friend or a colleague or, you know, somebody that you will trust though, because you're going to share your dreams, and committing to a practice where you recount your dreams to each other. Even if you don't like reflect upon them, having somebody that you know that it's a practice of recalling and recounting helps you to remember the dream, and it helps the dreams to come alive. I actually used to do this with Shireen Shostak, my friend who's an astrologer, and it was just incredible. And then I speak about dream groups, you know, and how, you know, that, you know, the practices in dream groups, how to create your own dream group, which is also an amazing, like community oriented practice that, has the dream come alive, and to talk about reverence, but an incredible way that like of understanding like what your dream might have meant to you and being of service to others in that pursuit.
Beautiful. I love those ideas. Yeah. And suggestions too. And I heard in there when you were talking about guiding people to find the answer or the meaning of the dream inside themselves, that just reminded me of what I know is our, the approach that we share to astrology as well, which is about using the symbols to help people feel more empowered and find the answers inside themselves rather than telling them what they mean. Right. And acting more as a guide than somebody who's like, has all the answers. Right.
Yeah. That is definitely my perspective in astrology and guidance in with my dream work, you know, that I'm the guide or a Sherpa, right? Helping you to get to the destination, but you know the destination.
Yeah.
I'm just like cheerleading you, witnessing you and supporting you.
Definitely. Yeah. Because, you know, the answers that you have inside yourself are way better than the answers that I can try to guess for you. Usually. Yes. Okay. Well, then we get to the section that I know our listeners are probably interested in, which is astro dream work. So how did you, you talked at the beginning of our show about getting excited about the intersection between astrology and dream work. So how have you navigated that? And what do you share with us in that section of the book?
Yeah, a couple of different things. Again, first, another like shout out to like that fortuitous experience of meeting Lawrence Hellman, who inspired this in me and many other things. And so if we think about it, right, like if we are moving through a Saturn transit, if you will, right, what is arising within you and your conscious minds? What might be arising within you in events in your life, right, are a reflection of Saturn's invitation. So it makes sense that it's not just occurring in your waking life that you're hearing Saturn's invitation, but that it would be occurring too, or that you may get that in your subconscious or unconscious, right? That your dreams will reflect that. So it is this like beautiful weaving together of those two things. And it so works in a host of different ways. When I work with clients and I'm listening to their dream, I'm looking at their chart, right? I'm looking at their chart, their natal chart itself, what transits may they be having, right? Just sort of start to hear the symbols or hear, you know, the movement through the lens of, you know, hear the archetypes here with a reflection into the archetypes here and how they actually feed back on each other in this synergistic way that may arise what is being called forth. So that's one way. Another way too is like, you know, working with the new moon is one of my favorite things. You know, what is this new intention that I'm setting for the month? You know, what's arising in my dreams on the new moon? You can use dream incubation for that, you know, or even condition, you know, focused on like Mercury retrograde. Like I'm going to, you know, it's interesting if you look at your dreams during a retrograde, right? Retrograde's oftentimes about going back, you know, going back to the past or retracing your steps to watch for those images to occur in your dream as well. To also see and get more evidence of what is it that I should be, that I am reassessing, reevaluating, and relearning during those times. So again, it's like, whether it be in terms of your own natal chart, what's going on in the Kairos, or also your own personal Kairos with your transits and progressions, you know, to like look to, you know, look at your dream in the context of, you know, an astrological perspective.
Nice. Well, you know, before we started, you were sharing some really interesting correlations as well in terms of astrological timing with the development of some of these breakthroughs and advances in our understanding around dreams and sleep. You want to share a few of those with us?
Yeah, for sure. So it's really interesting to think, you know, one of the groundbreaking events in terms of modern, you know, our modern understanding of dreams was Freud's publication of The Interpretation of Dreams, you know, in 1899. It actually has a date of 1900 because they wanted it to be like a new thing, but it actually came out in 1899, a little aside. And that was during the Saturn Neptune. You're going to see Neptune everywhere. Makes sense. Neptune is the planet of dreams. The Saturn Neptune opposition. We can then actually then look to in 1953, the discovery of REM sleep by Eugene Ossorinsky at the University of Chicago. This was groundbreaking in terms of our understanding of dreams, our understanding of sleep, 1953 during the Saturn Neptune conjunction. And then looking to two champions, you know, in our modern day world of, you know, of dreams, Freud has a natal moon Neptune square, and Carl Jung has a T square involving the sun, the ascendant, and Neptune. So it's just interesting to see Neptune, interesting but not surprising, right? To see Neptune popping up throughout.
Yeah, so cool. Oh, I love that stuff. We could talk about astrological correlations all day and never get enough of that. Well, as we wrap up our tour of your book, your last section is about children's dreams. So is that really a section that's geared more towards parents, or what's your intention with that section?
Yes, geared towards parents, you know, anybody who has a child in their life, you know, that they want to help both, you know, there's a chapter on how to help your children sleep better. And then there's a chapter on helping your children to forge a relationship with their dreams. Mm. You know, to normalize dreams, that dreams are something that we all do, to be fascinated by dreams, right? To start that process where they can look within, to rely upon themselves, to find that beacon of understanding within. But also, you know, a lot of things, you know, nightmares are higher in children, right? So how do you work with your child to help them not have that terror or that anxiety around nightmares, you know? And in the chapter two, I talk about different practices you can do about like taking the dream or taking the nightmare and using it as a bastion for creativity, or doing a version of image rehearsal therapy to help them to unwind and re-script the nightmare. So, you know, it's really beautiful when that becomes also another way of engaging with your children and understanding them on an emotional level and a new way of connecting with them. So, and connection to the family.
Oh my goodness. I can imagine how rich that is. So what a cool chapter. Thanks for putting that together for folks, Stephanie. Yeah, really amazing. And thank you for being with me today on the podcast. It's been a thrill to have you and a pleasure talking about dreams. And for those of you interested in learning more, please check out the book. Again, it's called The Complete Book of Dreams, A Guide to Unlocking the Meaning and Healing Power of Your Dreams by Stephanie Gehling. So check it out. And thanks again for joining us, Stephanie. And I hope to see you on the podcast again soon.
I would love that. And thank you, Tony, so much. It's been a pleasure. Right.
And everybody listening out there, bye for now and take good care until next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.